Greetings and welcome on board WDKOK Sunrise. I'm Mark Lawrence. We're going to interview two guests today to talk about an upcoming Flood Resiliency Fest that's coming up in Sealands Grove on the Isle of Kew. It may not sound like a normal family festival, but there will be some things there that the whole family can enjoy, but there will be a lot of things there that families will benefit from if they have been impacted by flooding, if they might be impacted by flooding in the future. You also hear about some long-term plans that relate to our long-term ideas and opportunities that relate to the future of communities where flooding occurs. So we're going to introduce our guests and talk about the Flood Resilience Fest. Laura Fowler is on the line. She's a senior lecturer at Penn State Law, is assistant director of the Penn State Institutes of Energy and the Environment, and is affiliate faculty at Penn State's School of International Affairs. Laura, thank you so much for calling in today.
Thank you for having me.
I really do appreciate it. I just think this sounds like so much great information. I always find it fascinating to learn how planning takes place and resilience gets brought up and talked about, and I think a lot of folks are going to learn a lot here. And Andrew Stula is back. He's from Bucknell University. We talked to him a lot last year when we were getting ready to start observing the 50th anniversary of the Agnes Flood. He's an associate professor of environmental studies and sciences at Bucknell. He is department chair of environmental studies and sciences. What happened? Did you stay too late at a meeting or something?
You got it, Mark.
That's your punishment this year. All right. Well, thank you. But, yeah, you started talking to us last year about Agnes, and not just in just remembrance, but to make sure that it was sort of brought up as sort of a current character or current discussion item.
Right. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Mark. And I'm really glad to be here with you and Laura today. You're exactly right. Agnes is an ongoing event. An event that's really shaped a lot of people's lives and the landscape. So I'm excited to talk with us all about the Flood Resilience Fest coming up.
Let's start out with Laura. I think we really want to hit the fest. So we're going to talk about the fest at the beginning, in the middle, and at the end. But in the middle, I want to talk about why this is brought up and talked about and studied and so on. So, Laura, introduce us to the Flood Resiliency Fest that's coming up May 7th.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for asking, Mark. So we are hosting basically literally a big tent on the banks of the Susquehanna River on the Isle of Kew in Sealands Grove from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 7th. And the goal for this is to provide an opportunity for people to come down, visit with folks from different agencies and different organizations, learn about flood and flood risk, but also flood resilience and opportunities. So we're planning on actually some pint-sized tours around the Isle of Kew to look at how different houses, for example, have been elevated or what's been done for flood resiliency, and then just a chance for people to talk with representatives from entities like CEDACOG, the Council of Governments. Terry Provost, for example, does tremendous flood resilience work. The Susquehanna River Basin Commission has an early warning system. The Borough of Sealands Grove has a lot of great flood-related information. We're sharing from Penn State, the Penn State Initiative for Resilient Communities, work that we've been doing in partnership with the Borough of Sealands Grove to think about flood impacts and flood resilience opportunities, and then a number of different organizations will also be there. And again, the point... Oh, go ahead.
No, please, go ahead. The point, my question was going to be, what's the point?
Yeah, the point is twofold. One is to share information, but really, and maybe more importantly, actually, is the chance for people to share their stories. How has flood and flood impacts impacted them, and what do they need in terms of being more resilient? And the estimate is that for every dollar that we spend proactively before a disaster happens, we save $6 in impact later. Pennsylvania is the most flood-prone state in the country, and it's already bad. It's predicted to get worse. And so the real question is, what can we do with local communities and collections of partnerships or networks of people to really help individuals, communities, and regions be more prepared for when the next flood hits?
Well, and Andrew, last year when we talked to you about remembering and the various anniversary observances that were going to come up this particular year and participated in a number of conversations, you talked about resilience as a past tense sort of character of the people. But at this fest, you're going to turn resilience into an action verb and sort of a planning opportunity.
Right. That's a great way to put it. You know, I'm trained as a historian. And I love events like this that Laura and her colleagues at Penn State have put together, because we get to see things that I've seen in the past happening in the present. And so, you know, some of our best scientists across disciplines, psychology, sociology, ecology, history, identify resilience as a social phenomenon, right? It's the social networks we have, the connections we have with each other and our neighbors. And in the context of flooding, that's never more apparent than when we're preparing for a flood, when we're going through a flood, and when we're cleaning up after a flood. Isle of Cue residents explained this to us in previous visits and events we've had with them, and I'm really excited on May 7th to hear more about how they've been able to maintain this social networks and connections, and if we can grow that further outside into the broader reaches of the borough and Sealands Grove area.
Laura, set the scene at the Flood Resiliency Fest. Who's going to be there? Give us a sort of a turnaround tour of what we'll see when the day comes.
Hopefully people will show up to the Isle of Cue and come on down. We will have food and beverages, and literally, like I mentioned before, a big tent with some tables, number of tables, and information from, I think we're at probably around 8 to 10 different organizations. You know, so individual information, we're going to actually have some big maps of the area, so people can draw on them and show, hey, in 2011 during Tropical Storm Lee and the impacts on the Susquehanna, here's what was impacted. A number of people there, again, to have a conversation about flood impacts, to share information, to answer questions. I think we're working on a sort of micro presentations of, you know, you want to know more about Flood Insurance 101, just kind of a quick overview, but trying to create a schedule and an opportunity for people to just stop by, get some information, share their thoughts, and if they want to take a tour, to be able to take a tour. So we can share with you, Mark, a more detailed schedule. We're finalizing that at the end of this week and early next week. But again, really the chance to stop by, have a cup of coffee, visit with people, pretty informal. No requirement that somebody show up for the whole 4 hours, but just trying to make it an opportunity for people to stop by. We're also hoping that since we'll be right next to the boat ramp, not on the boat ramp, we're not closing the boat ramp, but next to the boat ramp, that people might just wander by and be curious about what's going on and stop by and again, share their perspective and learn some more information.
Well, I think it is a question for both of you, but I'll start with Laura with this question, and that is, if somebody thinks back and remembers, and if they were happen to be around during Agnes and they're having a remembrance opportunity, something happens. There is that recollection seems to turn into a strengthening, sort of an annealing, if you will, if people realize what they accomplished and came back and survived. What's happening when that occurs, Laura?
Yeah, I mean, a couple different things are happening. I think one is, I think communities realize that they're far more resilient working together, and something like a disaster, a flood, you know, really draws that out, that it is an impact for the community as a whole, and a chance for people to, you know, roll up their sleeves and get their feet muddy, very muddy. You know, people talk about flood mud all the time, and I think Andrew can speak to that too, but the realization that we're all in this together, and that we really need to be working with each other. I think it breaks down barriers, and it forces people into a situation that draws on that human capacity for resilience and community. What we're hoping to do, though, is to draw on that pre-disaster and make sure that we have the systems of resilience set up, again, individually, community, and region-wide, so that when the next flood occurs, we're better off and we're not having to respond in real time or in the aftermath of a disaster.
This strengthening, I called it.
Yeah, I think I totally support what Laura just said, and just to put a little data from our research into this, we did about 45 interviews with people who lived through Agnes, and we took all those interviews and transcribed them, typed them out word for word, and then dumped all those words into a computer program that basically counts the words and lets us attach a meaning to different words. And so when you took all those words and you analyze them like we've done with my students about what people's feelings are about certain phases of the flood and who they're relying on through the phases of the flood, the strongest phase, the one with the strongest feelings about community, is the rehabilitation phase. It's when people get back into their homes after being evacuated and they find all the flood mud, they find their belongings thrown about, and they have to start pulling out carpet and furniture and appliances. That's actually when they associate with community the most, when they rely on neighbors to help them clean up, when they rely on neighbors to help feed them, and rely on neighbors to return to a sense of normal. And interestingly, the next two phases, like applying for flood insurance claims or small business administration loans, and then the final phase of engaging in municipal planning and risk reduction, those have the weakest ties to community. And so I really love what Laura is doing and her colleagues at Penn State, because they're trying to move community into those spaces of, let's work to reduce our risk before a disaster happens. Nobody wants to go through another flood disaster like Agnes. And if we can draw on each other's strengths now with education, with flood insurance information, with here are some models of what homes have done, here's what we'll need to do together during the next flood, I mean, we can really reduce a lot of suffering for people, and we could make living on the Isle of Kew and other parts of Sealands Grove even better than they already are.
Laura, I'm going to call it, after hearing Andrew's remark, I'm going to call it the rehabilitation muscle. You drive into a town that has a rehabilitation muscle that's built up. It's palpable. You can detect it. It's why is that? Tell me about that.
Yeah, let me give you an example. So I'm not a Pennsylvania native. I actually grew up in the Pacific Northwest. And before we moved to Pennsylvania and taking the job at Penn State, I actually worked as the coordinator for what's called the Chehalis Basin Flood Authority. The Chehalis River Basin, if you've ever driven between Seattle and Portland, the towns of Chehalis and Centralia are there. And they've been hammered by floods over 100 years. But in the last 25 years, they've been getting worse and worse. And part of my role there as the coordinator for the Flood Authority was to help that community rebuild. And it's really, really interesting because they got hammered by serious amounts of rain in 2007 and 2009, catastrophic, utterly catastrophic floods. And they got, you know, they kind of had a reprieve for about 10 years, and then in January of this year, they got hit by another flood. And I think the question was, well, what happened in the intervening 10 years? And you know, people realized 10 years ago we couldn't stop the floods, but we could really address the impact of flooding. And so in 2007, for example, they had upwards of $300 million worth of damage in the community. This year, with floods similarly large, they had $13 million. Still significant, but much, much less. And in between, you know, they had the ability to recover much faster. But that network of community discussions about flood resilience, you know, it's been a systematic approach of lots of projects, of elevating homes, of moving people out of harm's way, of making sure the sewage system works in a flood, of building an early warning system so that people know. So, you know, likewise, along with Andrew and other folks, we've been talking with folks in Sealands Grove in the area, they basically say, hey, you have to know that when the gauge on the West Branch does this, West Branch of the Susquehanna rises to this amount of time, you have 6 hours to get out. But that takes some real insider knowledge to understand the dynamics of the river or Penn's Creek or Weiser Run, right? And so when we're seeing more frequent, what people have called rain bombs, super intense heavy rain all at once, you know, you may not have that warning. And so what's it take to, again, we can't stop that, but we can reduce the impacts when that kind of event shows up. And so I think building the community resilience, building the systematic connections, I think is really important. And again, you know, the example I've seen in the Chehalis made fundamental difference when they got hammered by yet another flood this year. And that's what we're hoping to do here, again, is bring those resources together and leverage them. I think the other challenge in Pennsylvania is we have such a rich system of local governments. But if I'm local, you know, a smaller community, I just don't have the capacity to apply for funding or to leverage some of the resources that are out there. And so that's what we're hoping to do in building a larger network going forward, is to help build that community capacity, again, within communities, but also between communities.
Yeah, I think when I'm listening to Laura speak here, it's really fascinating to me that some of the barriers to building the more resilient community aren't technological, right? We have the information. We have the means of getting the information. It's really social. Let's get together and share what we have. Let's prepare each other. And so when I'm thinking about the Flood Resilience Fest, I really would love, you know, Sealands Grove Borough residents who are new to the area, who just moved in the last 5-10 years, who didn't go through Tropical Storm Lee in 2011, come down to the Isle of Kew that day on May 7th, learn from the neighbors who are lifers, who are river rats, you know, who know their land so well that they would know they have 6 hours to go when the water creeps up on their driveway. Learn from each other, because it will come in handy, and not just, you know, neighborliness, but, you know, life or death. And severe property damage when we have our next flood.
Don't necessarily have to have been through a flood to develop a flood muscle, right? You can do this in advance. It's like another muscle. You can do it in the gym before you actually go out and run a marathon or something along that line. We're interviewing today Laura Fowler, a senior lecturer at Penn State Law and assistant director of Penn State's Institute of Energy and the Environment and an affiliate faculty member at the Penn State School of International Affairs. Andrew Stuhl is back. He's from Bucknell, an associate professor of environmental studies and sciences, and is the department chair in that department right now. We're talking about May 7th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., a flood resilience fest on the Isle of Kew in Sealands Grove. The general public can attend, but if you live on the Isle of Kew, you have to go. There's no reason not to. And you'll be asked to not only enjoy and learn and to pick up information and hear and see, but to participate, to draw, to put down lines, to explain where you were when and what you've done since. And these are the kind of things that will be helpful, and you'll certainly learn more about this community that folks find so important. Andrew, why study this like this? I mean, we could just ask the Army Corps of Engineers to do something, say something, and have us build this, but this has got to be brought up and talked about with people.
Yeah, I think, people are the ones that make communities, and people take different roles in communities, and we grow out of those roles. And, I think about the next generation that will go through the tougher floods, the rain bombs that Laura mentions. They might not have experienced anything like this before. And so when we hear from each other, I think there's that intergenerational passing of knowledge that is really, really important in preparing the next generation for the next disaster, next flood. And, I think it's one thing we haven't really underlined, but it's really clear with this, the event planning that Laura and her colleagues have put together, there's a lot of wisdom and experience in the community already. And so hearing from each other is a way to recognize that experience. We, of course, want experts from the state government, from the federal government, from the Susquehanna River Basin Commission and our universities, but we can also learn from folks in the community. And then finally, in the time of disaster, we're going to need people to step up. We're going to need volunteers to step up to help in all phases. So the community needs to recognize its own resources with that. And I think this is a time where we can do that in a fun, lighthearted way, informational and family-friendly way, outside of the context of a survival or emergency situation.
Well, and Laura, same question. This idea only at Penn State. I didn't have to do much research onto this to find out that Penn State and Bucknell are really at the almost the center of the universe when it comes to studying the environment and the impacts of our built-out community and the vulnerability of our communities, but studying it really to the nth degree in a layman's term. Tell us about this mission that has been set out with this initiative at Penn State.
The Penn State Initiative for Resilient Communities is an internally funded program from our Penn State provost, and I think really to further the land-grant mission of Penn State, how are we as Penn State in service of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania? And I think one of the things that we've seen is there's a lot of information and data about current and future flood risk or climate impacts, for example, but that doesn't easily translate to what decisions am I as a homeowner or a renter making on a day-to-day basis, right? And so one of the things we've been really thinking about is how do you connect the dots with what people know and have experienced at that local level. When I first moved to Pennsylvania, about a year after I moved here, Bucknell hosted the Susquehanna River Symposium, which is a fantastic annual event. And while I was there, folks from the borough of Bloomsburg were talking about Tropical Storm Lee and the flooding impacts. And a story that I've never forgotten was, one of the elected officials standing and looking at and realizing that they needed sandbags, like as many sandbags filled as soon as possible. But he didn't have the people. He was looking for volunteers in the middle of a flood fight, and he turned to his teenage daughter and said, "How am I supposed to get, 100 volunteers in 15 minutes?" And she's like, "Oh, Dad, I've got this." It sent out basically a group text message, and pretty soon, in comes tromping the neighborhood, the community's youth who were looking for ways to be helpful, and they started filling sandbags. And he's like, "I never could have done this by myself." What you don't want to do is try and figure out how to mobilize that kind of capacity in the middle of a flood fight. But again, proactively, can you think through it and connect the dots of what we know and are studying at the universities with the community needs for that proactive planning with the hopes of decreasing the impacts collectively?
As the year progresses, we're going to have more conversations with Andrew about Agnes and remembrance. Just one sentence about the fact that this is going to be a busy year for you.
This is the 50th anniversary of this historic, transformative event. And fortunately, we have a lot of people in our communities who lived through it and have held on to very important memories. So look forward to events coming up in June and July to take stock of where we are and how far we've come and remember this important storm.
And if someone is considering not going to the Flood Resilience Fest and they have been impacted by flooding or they just want to be a great community member, convince them to go.
You know, we share this river, and I love the idea that we're all downstream, right? And a lot of people that we've interviewed through Agnes, they understand that. And I think if you want to do a better job living in this area and take part in civic engagement and protect and nurture the places that you love, this is one really critical way to do it. The river, in 364 days out of the year, might look very calm and beautiful and placid, but it can become a threat during flood events. And so we need to take stock of that and respect that. And if our neighbors know that and are telling us that, then listen to your neighbors and go down and have fun and enjoy the river today or during the Flood Fest, Resilience Fest, and learn more about what's going to come tomorrow.
Laura, some additional, we have a moment or two left for some additional remarks.
Yeah, people, we would love to hear people's stories and their thoughts and their ideas and their questions. One of the things that we're really, you know, we're hearing a lot from different federal agencies is what does the community want? What do they see? What do they need? And then, you know, can we help connect those gaps? And so this is a real opportunity to learn something, but also to really share and to meet people who are also thinking really hard about this, but looking for that community input to make a difference going forward.
Thank you so much. Is there some place to get more information on this if folks would like to learn more before the fest?
Yeah, if you look up the Penn State Initiative for Resilient Communities at Penn State, we actually have a flyer on that, and I can make sure that you have a copy of the flyer, so if people are interested. Again, the Penn State Initiative for Resilient Communities, and there's a flyer online that has additional information.
We'll continue to share it. It is May 7th, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on the Isle of Kew. Look for the big tent and learn and participate and help folks. Laura Fowler, Senior Lecturer at Penn State Law and Assistant Director at the Penn State Institutes of Energy and Environment, Affiliate Faculty Member of the Penn State School of International Affairs. Laura, thank you so much for all your help and your information, and I'll see you on the 7th.
We are looking forward to it.
And
thanks for taking the time.
Andrew Stoll is a Bucknell University professor, assistant professor of environmental studies and sciences, and is saddled with being department chair at the moment. So we appreciate him carving out even time on his ridiculously. But you must be the busiest person on campus now.
I think that's scientifically accurate. Yes.
I bet that is very true. And thanks for coming to our studios. We will post on our podcast page the link to the pamphlet that Laura mentioned. Thank you both so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.